We're starting a show now called The Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com. As always, we start today's show with a story by the extraordinary Mike Bone called Cousin Nicky Golfer, then a tune that I produced called Halloween Night, and then a special segment by David Havalosa, creator and innovator in the new wave scene. People younger than 30 might not have even heard about new wave. I tell you, when someone says to me, Beatles who? I'm out of here. And I wrap up the show today with an interview I did with Linda Barini. Stay tuned.
Cousin Nicky was a golfer, and a damn good one, too. He played all the golf courses, the important golf courses in the United States. He played Augusta National. He played Pebble Beach, and he played Sweetwater in Pennsylvania. But he wanted to go to where golf was invented. He wanted to go to St. Andrews in Scotland. And so he saved his money and bought a plane ticket and went over and went to the St. Andrews golf course, and he talked to the guy that runs the golf course and said, look, I'm playing here, and I'm wondering if there's a local person that I can play with. And so the guy said, yeah, there's a local guy. His name is Kenny McDonald. He gave him his phone number. So Nick called up Kenny McDonald and said, explained the situation. And he said, I'm looking for someone local to play with. I was wondering if you'd be willing to play with me. And he goes, yeah, sure. When are you going to play? And he told him, he said, be there tomorrow morning. I'm going to start at 9 o'clock. And Kenny said, yeah. He said, I'll be there at 9 o'clock. He said, I might be 30 minutes late. And so Nick says, sure. So 9 o'clock the next day, Kenny shows up, and they play a round of golf. And not surprisingly, Kenny beat Nick 4 or 5 strokes. And so Nick said at the end of the game, he says, how about tomorrow morning? Can you play another round? And so Kenny goes, yeah, sure. I'll be happy to. He said, what time? He said, 9 o'clock. And so Kenny goes, sure. He said, I might be 30 minutes late. And so the next day, Kenny shows up, and they play at 9 o'clock sharp, and they play a round of golf. But at the end of the game, Kenny had won, again, by 4 or 5 strokes. And Nick said to Kenny, he says, look, he said, I noticed yesterday you played with left-handed clubs, and today you play with right-handed clubs. You know, what's the how do you determine which clubs you're going to play with? Is it the weather? Is it the moisture? And Kenny says, oh, he said, that's easy. He says, in the morning when I get ready to go play golf, he said, I look at my wife. If she's sleeping on her right side, I play with right-handed clubs. And if she's sleeping on her left side, I play with left-handed clubs. And so Nicky says, well, what if she's sleeping on her back? Kenny goes, I'll be 30 minutes late.
Spiders Welcome to the New Wave Underground.
Robot! Police!
Police!
Police! Robot!
Police! Robot!
Robot! Police!
Police!
Police, robot.
My name is David Microwave Havalosa, and that was Baby Buddha doing Robot Police. Baby Buddha was a band that I produced and was a performing member of. The musical underground scene in San Francisco was at its height in 1979, with five clubs happening on just one street. Bands were popping up every day, and the city was alive with a creative pulse. My approach to music was always to be an alternative to the guitar rock culture, sometimes using machines instead of drums, and heavy emphasis on keyboards and synthesizers. My first band, Los Microwaves, was such a trio. Here they are with Radio Heart. After our first few independent singles, I started to reach out to like minds making records. Robbie Fields of LA's Posh Boy Records extended the opportunity for recording LPs. Bringing together some of LA and New York's notable studio talent, we recorded my solo LP, David Microwave, including this homage to the underground record scene.
When you gonna get rid of that stuff? Don't you know that I had enough? I know a real cool song, and I wanna put it on the record. Player, record. Player, record. Player, record. Player. When I turn my radio on, you know I'm tired of the same old song. It really makes my blood pressure drop when I hear that needle pop. Record player, record player, record player.
While getting a taste for producing my own recordings, I looked for opportunities to work with other artists. Los Microwaves had moved to New York in 81 to tap into the denser East Coast club scene. So many bands and musicians were contributing to a nationwide musical movement. A young band from Philadelphia was the first group I worked with besides my own. The band was Head Cheese, later to be reformed into the dance band Book of Love. Here's Head Cheese doing Teenage Idol.
Fame, my life will never be the same, 'cause I know how to play the game.
That was Head Cheese, Teenage Idol, followed by Seattle band Student Nurse doing Recht Up Staan, which means stand up straight in Dutch, as the lead singer was from Holland. I was very honored to be flown out from New York to Seattle to produce them. Los Microwaves was touring nationally at that point, and Seattle was a favorite club scene. Working with all these artists in the studio allowed me to be very creative and experimental with sounds and recording techniques. On each project, I would discover something new and interesting, and then try it out on the next project. In 1982, I got to work with my second European artist, Christiana Felsherinov, more notoriously known as Christiana F. Poshboy Records wanted to leverage her notoriety with becoming a recording artist, though she did not have much musical experience. Luckily, we assembled a very creative group of players and were able to capture her voice and words in a studio performance. Here's Christiana F. with Heimweh.
Where's the railway station, please? Where's the ticket office, please? I'd like a ticket to New York. First or second class, please. Single week town, one way round trip. Do I have to change tracks? What platform does the train leave from? Where's the nearest underground subway station? Muss ich auf die bus station, please? When the first bus to New York? Where's the last bus, the next bus? Who's let me off at the next stop? Dann fährt der erste Bus nach Los Angeles. Der letzte Bus, der nächste. Ich will nach Hause, wo ist mein Zuhause? Ich weiß es nicht, ich finde es nicht. Hinter mir der Teufel, der Tod, der Tod. Der Tod, der holt mich ein. Nach Hause, wo ist mein Zuhause? Ich weiß es nicht, ich finde es nicht. For cold, for cold, for trouble sickness. Can we come in something? For hay fever, for sunburn. Mein Zuhause, ich weiß es nicht, ich finde es nicht. Hinter mir der Teufel, der Tod, der Tod. Der Tod, der holt mich ein.
Gegen Heufieber, gegen Sonnenbrand empfehlen.
Can you show me where on the map I am? You're on the wrong road. Go back to Los Angeles. Go straight ahead. It's on the left and the right. Ich weiß es nicht. Ich finde es nicht. Ich will nach Hause. Wo ist mein Zuhause? Ich weiß es nicht. Ich finde es nicht. Hinter mir der Teufel, der Tod, der Tod. Der Tod, der holt mich ein. Können Sie mir auf der Karte zeigen, wo ich bin? Sie sind auf der falschen Straße. Fahren Sie zurück. Fahren Sie geradeaus. Es ist linke Hand oder rechte Hand. Ich will nach Hause, wo ist mein Zuhause?
Just remember, it's mountain music.
That was Heimweh by Christiana F., followed by Baby Buddha doing Do I from their second LP, Everyone Is My Age. That LP was produced in San Francisco, 1984, but released 3 years later on Hyperspace Communications. By the time we got to the end of the 90s, the New Wave Underground was pretty much history. I had moved on to creating music with computers and samplers, and eventually found my next career in the video game industry. Now I have been teaching digital sound and music and interactive media for the past 20 years. But recently, albums by Los Microwaves and Baby Buddha have been re-released on vinyl again, with more to come. After leaving the game biz full-time in 1995, I recorded an album in the genre of experimental jazz using technology and recording experiences picked up from producing music for video games. This last track is from the currently released LP, 31st Century Lounge Music, and the track is Una Noche en Tijuana.
This is Mystic Pete. It is October 15th, 2020. I have the extraordinary Linda Borini on the phone, and I'm going to let Linda introduce herself because she does a lot and she's good at a whole lot of things. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Pete. How are you?
So good to talk to you. It's a very intense, exciting time of humanity. Tell the audience a little about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Well, up until about 6 months ago, I guess, I was a live entertainment director, immersive entertainment, big stage. My goal was to produce something along the line of the Super Bowl halftime within 5 years. And then from there, I moved on to do other things. My call has always been to do humanitarian work, so I've been working hard at what I love, which is art and entertainment, for a very long time. And I developed what's coming useful right now in this moment is that I developed an ability to translate and understand what people need in order to feel good. And, you know, that's the core of entertainment. And so I don't know. I think that gave me a little bit of a particular eye into what has been going on around us, especially on social media. And, you know, since my industry has fallen apart in the last few months, I started dedicating myself to a little bit of activism using my tools, what I learned through years in entertainment and media, and see if I can do something positive and support democracy in some way in this moment.
So you're really good at media. You know how to make people feel good and entertain people, and you're trying to put it to good use to help people.
That's the idea. That's all I got to offer, you know?
That is a noble intention. And I know you're involved with Project One Voice. And let's get right into it and tell me how this activism rolls out into the world.
Gosh, there's so much has happened in the last few months. And at the very beginning, I just so happened to be in a particular, at the very beginning of COVID, I just so happened to be in a particular position because I am originally from Italy, from Veneto specifically, which got really hit super hard right at the top of it all. And so I was getting direct communication from my parents who were there. And that allowed me to see the thing happening from a different perspective. And that was really interesting to hear, you know, the Italian version of the facts and then hear what we were getting on this side and how they just didn't combine. And then, of course, you know, my entire life was canceled. So I had all this time in my hands, and I live alone. I have two dogs, and I started spending a lot of time online and making videos to see if I could somehow help with the tools that I have available to me in making, as you said, in making people, in inspiring people, in taking this the best way possible as an opportunity. Which I think there is always opportunity in trauma, opportunity for growth, and opportunity for unity when it's a social trauma. And then I just started realizing that things were just falling apart. And this trend that I've been witnessing for the last 40 years of this continuous distancing from truth and reality, this alternative fact kind of mentality, this my opinion is as valid as your opinion, no matter who you are. There is no more value into being an expert at anything. Everybody is capable of sentencing whatever they want from their pulpit just because they can, and freedom of speech, and it became apparent that we were facing something bigger and unexpected than just the virus. And and I got involved with a couple of Facebook groups, and I started really educating myself and learning more and more and diving into what was happening around me. And I discovered a lot of things by exchanging with people that were smarter than me in the matter. And at some point, it became time to do something about it. And with a couple of people, we got together and we started Project One Voice. And the concept behind it is to see if we can create a de-radicalizing experience online by creating compassionate and compelling content that kind of grabs you and draws you in. That we can all agree with, that is factual and clean and not opinionated, just heartfelt and true, and see if we can manage to pull on the same triggers that are being pulled through all these spreading of misinformation and conspiracy. See if we can, through beauty and the power of the suggestive and the subliminal, if we can maybe draw people back into the light and back into a place where people can open up to the truth, to factual information that is bad.
How does this radicalizing manifest?
I mean, I have not experienced it upon myself. I am so curious to talk one-on-one with somebody that has gone down the rabbit hole and has been able to pull himself or herself out. And I've heard I've done a ton of research to try and understand what's happening to my friends. And so I've watched a lot of talks and documentaries on cult mentality and how one can fall into that. I think I understand how that can happen. And I can see that we are in this moment filled with trauma and filled with heartbreak and loss. And that puts people in general in a place of vulnerability. And, when you're in a place of fight or flight, of survival, you're having a traumatic experience, you're not thinking straight. You're literally in survival mode. And so anything that has the appearance of being a lifeline, something you can hold on to, a belief, and then it's a belief that comes with it comes with a community, with other people that think like you, that believe like you, that are going after the same things, and you create this kind of trauma bonding experience. And I am not sure exactly how it took form online. I have the gift of skepticism.
In other words, you have common sense and you're a thinker.
Well, I don't want to give myself credit. I think it doesn't have anything to do with intelligence, or in some cases, not even education. I see friends and people that I know well that are well educated and highly intelligent falling for these really outlandish narratives. I think it's an addiction. I think it's a trigger. I think it's an emotional state, which is why, as we create content for a Project One Voice, or just in general, as we create content to try and just spread a good message to support democracy and support truth in whichever way, it's really not so much about what the content contains as far as information or data or facts. You know, I see people fighting online and, they just toss all these data in there and all these factual, awesome information, and that's great. But that doesn't work. It doesn't change people's minds. What changed people's minds is an experience. And so as they developed this, as they discovered this radicalizing experience online and suddenly found themselves going from being, from being liberals or progressive to really, flipping the script completely, that is beyond content, is beyond what's said. It has to be an emotional, there has to be an emotional experience. So and that gives me hope, because I think we could potentially figure out how to create that same kind of quote-unquote manipulation, let's be honest, but to direct it into the positive.
So what you're saying is, in a time of great change, we latch on to easy answers. You can just surf the wave of change. Some people love that and love the expansion and keep their head about them and love peeling off their skin and turning themselves inside out. But I think for a lot of people, change is scary and they just want things to go back to the old way. You and I know ain't going back to the old way. But then there's, as you point out, these parasitic groups that take advantage of people's needs for easy answers, and they supply them. They're very selfish, just trying to make money off of people, gain power off of people's vulnerabilities, and they provide a simple villain, a simple solution, and it's often very sinister. I think, though, the larger issue is new technology. And with any new technology, usually the criminals and the roaches and the
rodents come in first. Even when when the airplane first came in, some of the first people to use the airplane were criminals flying in arms and drugs and that kind of stuff. And then society kind of caught up with it and figured out how to manage air travel. Same thing happened, well, even with radio. You know, people took advantage of new technology because nobody knew how to manage it. And so we have this new technology called the internet, which is vast and permeating. And you have all of these cockroaches and vermin just infesting it. But in a sense, like in this time of intensity, it's right before an election and everybody has their own agenda and you have these really sinister forces at work. It's like, you know, we're talking about vaccines for the pandemic, but we actually have to get vaccinated against misinformation. And we have to learn how to deal with this new global mind. And we're just thrown in the deep end of this pool and we have to learn to swim. And we are. It's just like at some point, after you've seen the wave after wave after wave of ridiculous stuff, you kind of learn and you kind of realize, oh yeah, some guy from Nigeria is offering me $10 million. Okay, I know that's not true. Like we learn, oh, there's all this sinister child molestation rings out there. You know, like we learned, oh, this is just kind of to scare us, so we sign up with a crazy extremist group. So we are learning, we are being inoculated. It's difficult, it's painful. The technology is intense and all pervading, but there's just no other way around it. We kind of have to go through this, and that's what we're in the middle of. And I like what you're saying is, you know, you're putting into the positive end. You're doing media and entertainment that's uplifting, that's not based on scaring people, giving people the truth, giving them positive ideas, but also thoughtful ideas.
Yeah, well, I really believe that at this junction, there is no AI is going to be part of our life. We all watched all the sci-fi movies and they all tell the same kind of story. We are not going to be able to turn away from, first of all, the damage that we've done to the environment. So I can't really tell what the future holds for us in that sense. But technology is part of the advancement, is part of progress. We create it, we then have to mess with it a little bit. We learn all the horrible things about it, and then we should be able to implement it and integrate it with our lives and become smarter with it. And so there is no turning back and away from it. We just gotta get good at using the tools that are available to us through technology, including all those horrible manipulative tools that the Facebook or other, you know, all social media platforms really kind of put into practice. We can embrace those and turn them around and see if we can put them to good use. Same with our ability to produce quick content. It's all there for us to turn to our advantage as a humanity. But what needs to happen first is that we gotta become good people. And ultimately, what we've been doing for the last 100 years in this postmodern philosophy that has taken over after the Industrial Revolution, and we're existing in a place of non-truth, and with no truth, there is no values. And we have been led by this progressive mentality that tries to advocate for complete equality and radical tolerance. And to me, it's a growing pain. We have to learn that, how, as beautiful as that thought process, that idea, that ideology can be, that we're all equal and that my opinion is as valid as your opinion, at the end of the day, it just isn't. If I, you know, if you are a Buddhist and I am a Nazi, at the end of the day, my idea of running the world can be put into practice. It has been done. It is valid in that sense. We figure out that maybe it's not the best idea in the world. Let's try and go with your idea as a Buddhist, right? So we need to evolve, but as progressives, we have not been kind to those that are not as evolved or progressive. And we have actually ignited so much hate. I really truly believe that, you know, the quote-unquote elite, which is the educated class, whatever, the people that have evolved, that have developed a more evolved thought process, a more evolved mentality, have been a little bit snotty, you know, and that created a lot of friction with less evolved, in that sense, communities that are still living by a more tribalistic sense. And we've rubbed them the wrong way. So at this junction, we need to learn that it's not about denying each other or yelling at each other or fighting and saying you're wrong, you don't exist, or that's old, or that's outdated, we're doing it differently, which are all truths. It's true that everything has a little bit of truth in there. We need to learn to integrate with each other. And I think, you know, the dialogue that we're going to be experimenting with, so that we can learn how to integrate with each other. It is going to come through dialogue, and that dialogue is going to happen and is happening online. So what we are doing with Project One Voice, for example, and what I see so many other groups out there doing in the media world, is really trying to figure out a way to mend that gap, so that we can start communicating again, so that we can start having a dialogue again that is productive and integral, that can coordinate all points of views and be fair in assessing and arranging them in a way that is progressive, but not snotty. You know what I mean? And that's what I try. That's what I think I'm trying to do as art director with Project One Voice, is really trying to find that voice where I can at least inspire inclusivity while still presenting facts and still standing by what at Project One Voice we believe is... It's a way for us to get out of this mess.
You know, I think you're alluding to the fact that there's a light and dark side to all one. In other words, people put on this veneer sometimes of equality to take advantage of other people. And that's when it kind of can be sinister. It's like a marketing thing. But on the other side of the equation, there's a wonderful opportunity here, too, for a global mind, really. It's this union of the synthetic and the organic. And the internet is a vehicle for that. So I think when we do mature and it comes to a place where we are using it for kindness, where we are being responsible, and we are not taking advantage of people or infringing on people's free will. Like, there's a certain emotional maturity that happens. I think the result can be amazing and beautiful. It's a few steps ahead of where we are as kind of these advanced apes. But if we can negotiate our way through all this swamp, there's a possibility for a very beautiful future. Linda Borini, you get the last word.
Thank you. Well, yeah, I know that these are very dark and unsettling and uncertain times. And I was reminded today, I was doing some writing, and I was reminded today of the struggle that my grandmother went through in Italy. I mentioned that I'm from near Venice, and she lived through both the big wars.
Mussolini.
She was around then. Like, her entire youth was consumed by war. And I remember grandma telling me tales, and there's thousands of them. But the one thing that never, that kind of got lost in translation when she would tell me all these stories, is that I always took her pain and their trauma is personal. She would sometimes like look away in a gaze, and I always thought it was her own personal pain. And what I am understanding now, witnessing what's happening all around us, is that the perspective in times like these is much, much, much bigger. There is this hopelessness, there is this inability to be able to see beyond today, this helplessness in watching division just take place inside their own houses. And so I'm learning for the first time how grand that mirage that she will look at whenever she looked away like that, because I really didn't know. But I also think that through great trauma like this, that is collective, with the virus and with everything that is happening all around the world economically, it's a huge worldwide crisis, and this information war that we find ourselves in inside of. Some experts call it, you know, the next war. Like, it's a real war and we're in it and we don't even know it. Well, I feel that these are growing pains that are necessary so that humanity can move on to the next level, so that we can level up and grow up and be better. So I don't know how long this will last, and I don't know how difficult and how hard it will get, but I have hope. And I'm already seeing, you know, in my little world of what I am trying to do, I'm already seeing online the conversation shifting and changing from 6 months ago when people were just screaming at each other, like, well, what happened to you? You're not a doctor. And now it's turning to something more along the line of, hey, if you need to talk, if you're confused about things, give me a call. Let's talk in person. If you are finding yourself going down some rabbit hole and you don't understand what's happening, let's talk about it. I want to hear you out. And that is a huge shift in collective consciousness in just a few months. So, and then the content that we're making and other agencies and organizations that are popping up like mushrooms to with the same kind of goal, with the same kind of drive or inspiration to just put beauty back into the conversation, into the internet, put positivity and unity and oneness without bypassing. It's not about bypassing the argument. It's about finding a way to have the argument in a more productive way, in a more inclusive and integral way. And we'll get there. It's going to take all of us to get involved. You know, those who can shouldn't shy away from the conversation. We need to figure out a new form of dialogue, and we can only do that by exercising. So here we are. I you know, if you're spending a lot of time online talking to people, and sometimes it goes well and sometimes it sucks, I feel that that's kind of the exercise that humanity is being driven to take on. Make sure that you also spend enough time outside in nature. Absolutely balance yourself out. But we are doing what we're supposed to be doing, and we will get out of this thing together.
Beautifully put, Linda Borini. Thank you.
Thank you, Pete. This was lovely. Thank you for having me.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
We're coming to the end of the show called Mystic Pete Chronicles. If you'd like to reach me, you can find me at mysticpete.com. We started the show today with a story by Mike Bone, then a tune I produced called Halloween Night, then a special segment by David Havalosa. What happens to perhaps forgotten musical pioneers? They go on to make more creative genius. And we wrapped up the show with an interview I did with Linda Barini. Thanks so much for listening. Mystic Pete out!